And here's Mike. Mike Thomas is co-author of a book about you. I'm sure you people know that music. You know, it's the Johnny Carson theme, the Tonight Show theme. By the way, the Tonight Show is on Antenna TV Monday through Friday, 9 o'clock, Saturday at 10 o'clock p.m., of course. You know, and I point that out because I think my first question out of the box is all these years later, we still care about a certain small percent of performers from that era.
Sure.
You know, Sinatra, Carson, Lucy. Books are still, I know there's a book coming out next year still. What is it about, Carson, that makes us still wonder, still care?
I think Carson in particular had an emotional connection with a huge portion of the population. You know, a lot of Gen Xers, a lot of boomers especially. But, you know, he was the last voice and the last face millions and millions of people saw and heard at night before they went to bed. He wound them down. He made them feel like, you know, life would go on the next day. He was never very controversial. He always, you know, sort of played to the middle. He didn't upset people. It was a very comforting feeling to watch and see Johnny Carson.
That's, you know, something occurs to me. So today, the late night host, or at least two of the three, Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert, their monologues are political. Now, Carson's were too, but Carson didn't necessarily take a point of view, and those guys certainly do. If you've been following what they've been saying, they absolutely take a point of view. Is it better not to? Is that some of the difference?
I don't know if it's better not to. That was just Johnny's preference. He wanted to appeal to as wide a swath as the American viewing population as possible. Everything's so fragmented these days that I can see why all those other guys have taken their own sort of views. And, you know, Carson, who knows what he'd be doing today if he were still around, you know, doing this.
Do you think he would take more of the Jimmy Fallon approach, which it, ironically, is the Tonight Show host, right? And yeah, talk about politics, but again, this wide swath, making fun of everybody, as opposed to the way Kimmel and Colbert do it.
I think today you have to have a point of view to kind of single yourself out from the bunch. There are so many shows. There is so much content. So I know. I wonder if he could get away with playing more middle of the road.
The name of the book is Carson the Magnificent, but I failed as a radio host. So I said co-author, and you are, but I didn't say who the other co-author is, and that is legendary late Bill Zemme. How did you get into this project in the first place?
Well, this Bill was a longtime friend of mine, and Bill, I should say, wrote 3/4 of this book. I just took it home.
And he did a lot of the research?
He did all of the research. I mean, I had to do very little additional legwork to get this book done because he had piles and piles of transcripts and artifacts and, you know, interviews. And he had transcripts from every single Tonight Show that was on tape. I mean, they lost a decade of them from the 60s to the 70s, but the Johnny Carson Archives has all of them digitized and they're all trans. So he had everything I could ever want. And he had already written about 3/4 of it. He had flashed forward a little bit in his portion to later years in Johnny's life. But basically what I was brought in to do is take Johnny from New York to L.A., and where he went from Prince to King. And it's essentially in 1972, yeah. The project came to me a few months after Bill died. His former editor, Jonathan Karp, who bought the book when he was at Random House, wanted to find some way to keep it alive. And ultimately, he got back to me and said, would you like to take a crack at it? John is now the CEO of Simon & Schuster. So he's in a good position to keep this this thing afloat. I said, John, I need to read the manuscript first. I don't know what Bill has written. And I need to figure out what Bill collected over all these years. Because even though he and I talked, we never really talked Carson or what he had collected. But I was given the keys to his Northside storage locker by Bill's daughter. And I just found piles and piles of stuff. So it was a matter of my sifting through that, figuring out what I needed to complete Johnny's story. And I came back to John and I said, I'd like to take a crack at this, daunting though it was.
So I need to ask you a very serious question. You write in the book that you and Bill Zemme often would go out for slow-cooked ribs at the favorite Chicago place of both of yours.
Right.
What was that place?
Twin Anchors.
Okay, I figured. I figured, but
yes.
But I didn't know and for sure.
25 years of going to Twin Anchors. I think about, 25 years. Because the last time I met him there was just a few months before he died. He insisted on coming out. He wasn't feeling well, but he's like, let's go meet up there. And so we sat in our corner booth there and just shot the breeze for a couple of hours. And that was unfortunately the last time I saw him. But I first met him there in person in 1996, because I had sent him some of my horrible freelance clips and a letter saying, I was 24 years old at the time, or 25. They weren't great. I had just moved to Chicago. I had been reading him for years. And I said, can I pick your brain? I love your writing. And he said, yeah. And so we met up. And that was the start of our partnership. I was his research assistant for 3 years.
Greta Garbo famously would say something like, I want to be left alone, or whatever she said. Something like that, right? And you called Carson, in the book, the Garbo of comedy. I don't know that he wanted to necessarily be left alone, but he was kind of a loner.
Yeah.
I knew Betty White through the animal association that we both had. Betty White shared an agent with Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
She was an incredibly frequent guest player on The Tonight
Show.
Some
funny bits with her and Johnny.
Exactly. Yeah. There was one I remember. I don't remember the setup, but they both got very wet. All I do remember is that water kept pouring in on both of them, and things didn't go exactly. And that is the thing about Carson. He can go with the flow.
Exactly.
And Betty White, so to speak. Of course not. And Betty White could do the same thing. She was very fast on her feet.
Yeah.
Which is also why he liked her just as a come down, sit down as a guest.
Yes. He loved people who came to play.
Yeah. And she always understood that.
Yeah.
And she talked to me about that.
Oh,
and
wow.
She said, as well as I knew Carson, who she thought, I think I can say this, was the best, and she was on every talk show imaginable.
Yeah.
But she said, as well as I knew him, I never knew him.
Yeah, that's not uncommon. I think a lot of people would say that, except possibly his wives and his very close, family members, a couple of friends maybe. But Johnny, I mean, that Garbo line, by the way, is Bill's, as is most of this this book. And I think it's apt, but you're right. He didn't sort of seclude himself because he wanted to get away from the world. He was just okay being alone and doing his own thing. And he was in front of people so much. And while he loved that connection with the audience, he also loved reading and looking through his telescopes and playing tennis and going out to eat and, other more solitary things. He could spend days and days by himself, just poring over newspapers and books. So, yeah, that was the flip side of his personality. And he was a very interior guy. He didn't wear his heart on his sleeve.
You said his wives, of which I've lost count as to how many there were. You have quotes from some of those wives in the book. Interesting, because I've not read that in previous books, that they have publicly said anything one way or the other.
They were Joanne, who was Johnny's second wife, and Joanna, who was his third wife. His first wife was actually, she went by Jody, but her name was Joan. And his fourth wife is Alex, so she broke the mold. But yes, Joanne and Joanna were very forthcoming with Bill. He developed close rapport with both of them, and they have a lot to say about Johnny. They have been quoted before, but never like this. They have never said what they told Bill.
Yep, and you could read about what they told Bill and what you wrote in the book, Carson, the Magnificent. Mike Thomas, the co-author, is here. Carson, according to an interview I saw, I heard it. He said at one point in time that Joan Rivers was his favorite guest. Having said that, things didn't work out for Joan Rivers the way she might have wanted, or what maybe Carson thought at that time that he said it. I want to talk about that when we come back on WGN. Again, the book, Carson, the Magnificent. Back on WGN, Steve Dale here. I'm talking with Mike Thomas, with Bill Zemme, co-authored Carson, the Magnificent. So, yeah, he did love her until, as you said, he didn't love her? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, Johnny didn't like disloyalty. And, of course, Joan was becoming big. She was a popular guest host. I mean, first she was a popular guest, and then she was a guest host. But she went off. She was going to do her own show and, you know, go up against Carson, and he just cut her off. Like, no more. That was, you didn't do that to Johnny.
And she, I happen to have done, maybe what was her last interview? Right here on WGN. And at least her perspective was, at least the way she articulated that, is that she had no idea what happened.
Yeah.
And it hurt her, you know, very much, because she felt that they were friends. You know, Ed McMahon said, "We were never friends," and he always called him Mr. Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Always, even after retirement, Mr. Carson. When you interviewed Ed McMahon and you asked him about something other than, what was it, Star Search, which he was always promoting. But if you talked about something, it was Mr. Carson. Same thing with Doc Severinsen, who I never did have an opportunity. Doc is still out there, I think, performing.
He's 96 now,
yeah,
I think,
something
right?
like that. 96? Yeah.
97, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So he never really had that personal... I mean, did he hang out with Ed McMahon and Doc
Severinsen? Did in the early days, yeah. They were famously drinking buddies in the early days. I think the separation became more and more as they got more famous. And you could even see on the air sometimes Ed would visibly annoy Johnny by jumping in too early or flubbing a line or something like that. But it, you know, going back to that Joan bit, I wonder if Johnny laughed so hard, and now that I'm thinking about it, because it was a mother joke initially. She was talking about her mother.
Yeah.
Didn't want her. Johnny had a famously fraught relationship with his own mother, whom he could never please. Even into his superstardom years, he could never please her. So I wonder if he just sensed this eternal truth in that joke she told and laughed extra hard at it.
Yeah, I mean, he literally almost fell off his chair.
Yeah.
Someone else famous for falling off their chair when they were bemused was Jack Benny.
Yeah.
I bring him up because—
Johnny's hero.
Right. Right, which you do write about in the book. When you watch Carson, do you see little bits of Jack Benny?
You do. You see the mannerisms.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, they're not broad either. I mean, Benny had a lot of facial mannerisms. He had a lot of voice ticks, sounds he would make. And you can see that in Carson. And it's especially entertaining when Carson is bombing, which people love to see him do because he could always extricate himself from it. But it was about a look in his eyes or a turn of the head or a utterance of some sort. So in that way, I think it was very much, and the rhythms too are very Benny-esque.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned drinking buddies. Was he an alcoholic, do you think? Is that something that you're not sure, huh? You address it a little bit in the book.
You do, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can say Johnny was for sure an alcoholic. He was a very bad drinker.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that it didn't take much for him to Jekyll Hyde. You know, maybe a couple of vodkas and the switch would flip. So, you know, and that was apparent from the early years onward. He, as far as I know, quit the hard stuff later on. But it was vodka, I believe, especially was problematic for him and would cause all kinds of bad behavior with his wives and out in public. And I think his wife, Joanna, said for this book, if they were at a restaurant, Johnny caused a scene, she would have to call the hostess the next morning and apologize. But he's Johnny Carson.
So
what are you
going to
do ultimately,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. I saw one clip where this was clear. And she was surprised by it. I'm talking about Diane Cannon, the actress.
Mm-hmm.
Very beautiful lady. And he said that we dated at one point, talking to Diane. And he asked her something about, would you do that again? And she literally fell off her chair laughing. Like, are you kidding? I'm not dating you again. And rumor has it that Angie Dickinson and Margaret,
mm-hmm.
there's a long list of people that he canoodled with. I don't know if it was between marriages or during his marriages, but you kind of address a little bit of that. But
a little bit of that, yeah. Well, there was this sort of bachelordom he had, you know, after he had divorced, let me think, Joanna. This was the early 80s. So he had a stretch there until he met Alex in 84, I want to say. There was at least a couple of years where he was dating. I think I put it that he was playing the field, probably playing the field like a star shortstop, though there is no proof of prolificacy. Because we don't really know. He was a ladies' man. He was not faithful during his marriages, but that was the stretch where he was very much sort of, you know, Johnny Carson, the bachelor playboy.
Let's get back to what he did on stage. You write that Jack Parr, who was a talk show host, for people who don't know, and very successful, but just for a couple of years, really, compared mm-hmm. to Carson's run, that Parr worked emotionally. Actually, I think Carson said this in a quote, Parr works emotionally, I work intellectually.
Yeah, I mean, that was true. Johnny was not one to, again, wear his heart on his sleeve or be very emotional or effusive on the
air. But he could do physical comedy.
He could do physical comedy. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But Parr was, I mean, Parr would storm off the set. Parr would cry on the air. Johnny would not do any of that stuff. He was very much a cool guy for a cool medium. And that's in part why he was so perfect for that show, and he reinvented it. And, you know, as a result of him not being too hot for that medium, it lasted 30 years.
He said he never thought it would last that long.
No, he always thought it was going to end in, you know, next year or in 5 years, or I can't see myself doing this in a decade. He would say that over and over throughout his career, starting at least in the 70s, maybe in the late 60s even, because the show started in 62. So,
but once he retired, he more or less... I mean, it wasn't like so many. I mean, it's a little different because I'm talking about musical performers, but I saw the Rolling Stones perform their last concert, and that was 10 years ago or more. He didn't do these comebacks. He made a couple of guest appearances, was on the Kennedy Center Honors, was on Letterman a couple of times, and that was it.
Yeah, it was it. Yeah, he was gone, baby, gone. When he was retired, it was just, he didn't feel he had anything more to give other than what he had given for almost 30 years. I mean, there was talk of a comeback special, and a couple of his monologue writers wrote up a draft of something that was supposed to air in 94, but they ultimately nixed it and never got beyond the draft stage. There's a portion in the book where Mike Berry, one of his monologue writers, actually goes down the list of each sort of sketch in the special and what Johnny thought of it and what he liked, what he didn't like. But Johnny had nothing left to prove. And, of course, TV is very different than live music. It's like you don't go around performing television. I mean, it's in a way that you perform live music. Right. You know, it's a whole different thing. So, yeah, Mick and the boys can keep going until they're 100.
So when that monologue was crafted, was he a taskmaster to edit each and every word, or did he say the writers must know and pretty much did it as written on those cue cards?
Well, I mean, Carson was God, ultimately, in terms of what stayed in and what came out. But I get the sense that it was very much a collaborative effort. And he brought in guys whose, you know, capacity for comedy he admired. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. A lot of them stayed for a very long time with him. So, he trusted in their talents and their sensibilities.
In a way, Carson was king of the world, but he wasn't. The NBC bosses were. So if it was up to Carson, maybe Letterman would have done The Tonight Show and not Jay Leno, but it didn't work out that way, did it?
No, it didn't, and Bill Carter writes beautifully about that in his book, The Late Shift, and, you know, everything.
An entire book about that,
been made into a movie, and Johnny was part owner of the Letterman slot after him. You know, mm-hmm. Dave and Johnny were always kind of like a father-son figure. Johnny was Dave's mentor. Really, and he admires him greatly to this day. And I know Dave was not happy when that happened. Jay Leno ultimately took the slot, but I don't know. I think it worked out for the best. Dave went on and did many more years of great television at CBS.
Yes,
you know, and he and Jay were never the same again. But what are you going to do?
Well, that's television, I suppose.
Yeah.
Who is your next book going to be about?
I wish I knew. I'm looking around, but if you have any good ideas, please let me know.
All right, I'll try. There's plenty of them in entertainment, right?
There are, but it's a matter.
There's always drama about that late night.
There is.
You know, you could right now the two Jimmys, Kimmel and Fallon and Steve.
They
Colbert.
Like each other too much.
Oh, that's no fun then. You
no
can't
fun
do
then,
that.
Right?
Forget it.
Yeah.
The name of the book is Carson the Magnificent. Did I say that right?
You said that beautifully.
Thank you. Bill Zemme and Mike Thomas. Thank you so much for coming here to WGN, Mike.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's great being on.